Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Humpity Hump Day, and I'm just really thrilled to be here, as always. Every week, there's a new exciting adventure that we get to go on together, and we're doing this internationally, so that makes it even cooler, I think. Big shout-out to some new fans in Australia. Hello, Australia. Love you. Can't wait to come and visit you soon. Definitely on the bucket list, personally and professionally, so that is fantastic. As you all know, sign in or... friend me on Facebook so you can keep up. 2014 is going to be an amazing year. We have I have some very, very large news to announce in January, and it's just going to be incredible. An incredible, incredible year, and lots of on-site personal face-to-face engagements are transpiring, and it's just happening every day. And grateful to all of you who invite me to these various events. I love it. I love to meet you. I love all the hugs and inspiration that you give me. It makes this worthwhile. So as you know, if you're following me on Facebook, I am in the process of designing a vlog series. And if you don't know what a vlog is, it's basically the radio show visual. So you get to see my silly looking face as I inspire you. And then the first series is Living and Thriving with Rusty, Transitions, Reinvention, and Creation. I'll let you sit on that one and kind of think about what you think I'm going to be doing. And if you have suggestions, this is going to be a 7-part series, very short, but you know, it's really going to guide you through some change and growth and renewed hope in regards to transitioning life. And I think it's going to be quite complementary to the radio show, and it's been a lot of fun to work on. Today, I wanted to give a shout-out to Amy. I see that she's online. I'm surprised that you're here today, Miss Amy, after delivering your grandbaby the other day. Congratulations, grandbaby number 2.
Yes, and he took a long time getting here, but it was well worth it. It was a beautiful birth process for Alicia and Peter, and he is absolutely beautiful, if I do say so myself. All are doing well, so... I was able to get on today and get on my regular schedule, which
Yay.
Feels good because I haven't had a regular schedule in a while, so I feel like I'm getting a little bit back on track by being with you all today. So,
all right. You sound a little sleepy.
I am. I had 10 hours sleep in 5 days, and it's really getting to me.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm not as young as I used to, but I'm drinking green tea right now, and taking my vitamins and trying to get my body back up to speed here.
Absolutely, so. Before you get sick. Definitely need to take care of your body.
Well, there's allergy things going on right now, so I sound sick, but I'm really not. It's strictly allergies, but my type of allergies are very strong this year. So, you know, add that on being in a hospital for 5 days. That would do it.
That would do it. And no offense to hospitals, I know they do the best that they can,
but
they're just filled with sick people. There's cooties everywhere.
Inundated with that many, you know, and there's a lot of sick people in hospitals, and my body's just not used to being in that environment, and which is going to have to get used to that, which is hopefully some new news I'll have to share here in a few months, but a lot of big things are happening for me as well, and trying to figure out which direction to go into. I have a lot of opportunities, but... I'll let you know when I decide.
All right. Well, keep us posted. Inquiring minds want to know. So I don't know if you've had a chance to actually look up the lineup that we have until 2014. And as everybody knows, I'll repeat myself one more time, where I'm going to be doing 2 shows a week next year because I'm being inundated with some really incredible people, and the more tools we have in our tool belt, I think the cooler we are. So next year is definitely two shows, but with some incredible, incredible, incredible guests. I don't know if you've had a chance to see the latest lineup, but it's amazing.
Whatever you've added over the last, like, say, 10 days, I really haven't looked at. I did get a peek at one email you sent. So it looks really good. It filled up pretty quickly, too. Quite amazed how quickly that all transpires, and you're looking into 2014.
Yeah, it's great. And Karen is my personal assistant, has been a heaven sent, and really keeping, she's doing a great job. So big shout out to you, Karen. I know that I keep you quite busy, and we're racing with some pretty major projects. Huh?
Helps us do what we do.
That's right. She does. She does. She's very, very good. So big shout out to Karen. And excuse me as I choke on myself. We have today, and I'm really thrilled to talk to Kristen. Excuse me one second. Kristen of Canines for Disabled Children, or Disabled Kids. She is actually quite a fabulous woman. She was referred to us in regards to her MS, which is something that is important to most of the community that listens to this radio, as most of us have, you know, some sort of an MS being one of the most popular ones. She has a BA in Performing Arts, Directing and Producing from Franklin Pierce College. She assistant dog user from 2001, April to present. She's a public speaker on assistant dogs, which is my running partner. It's really, really, really wanting to learn more about that aspect. So without giving away too much information, I'll allow Kristen to navigate through a little bit less clumsy here on Living and Thriving. Call in,
thank you very much.
Questions. She's a fabulous woman. I have a lot of respect for her. And the number here is 347-205-9443. And yes, Kristen, you are on, and I'm so grateful that you've taken time out to talk to us today about your life and your journey and the dogs and the kids and just so much excitement.
This is a great opportunity for me, and I want to thank you for including us. Karen did a lot of work to get us connected, and I really appreciate it. It's a great chance to reach out to more people and connect them with something very dear to my heart. So thank you very much for that.
So there's basically five questions that I ask, and every now and then, because conversation is so easy, there might be a couple of other ones, but really the first primary question is, who are you and what do you do?
Well, I'm very blessed to be the executive director of Canines for Disabled Kids. And in short, that means I do almost everything. I have a small, wonderful staff here that keeps me balanced and keeps me going when I'm yelling, where is this and what is this and who said I could do this and how we're going to make it happen. And they are phenomenal. There's myself, and there are three other employees for this organization that we work nationally. So there's a lot of work going on here and a lot of dependence on each other. And I really strive to be able to get as many people as possible on board with service dogs. I work one-on-one with families. I spend hours just talking with parents and grandparents about what service dogs do and whether or not they can really work and help their children or their grandchildren to overcome their disabilities. I go out into the community. I travel the country speaking about what service dogs are so that everybody can be on board. I don't want anybody taken advantage of. I don't want a user to take advantage of a business. I don't want a business to take advantage of a user. I want to get everybody on the same page because this is such an incredibly valuable and personal tool that it changes people's lives, and if they can't get out and use it properly, what good is it? So this is what I do, and I can't shut up about it, to be very honest, which is makes a big advantage for the presentations that I do and the time that I spend out in the communities.
So give me an idea of who Kristen is aside from Canines for Disabled Dogs. What when you were a child, did you envision that this was your path? What did you want to be when you grow up?
When I grew up, I think like many children, I changed my mind several times. I considered going into law. I was considering going into corporate law at one point. History was very interesting to me. I was very gifted in math and had several math instructors praying that I would take at least a math minor in college, if not a math major. Enjoy a lot of that type of puzzling things out and working on technicalities, actually, is something that I'm going to be like, wait, let's go back and look at that. But technically, you said, and that was something that I often used in arguments growing up as a teenager and as a child. But at some point I decided that performing arts was where I wanted to be, but that I wanted to make it happen for people. I didn't want to be the performer. I wanted to bring it to people. I wanted to be able to present it, to be able to create it, be able to take what was in my head and put it out there for people to see. So I strove to get a degree. I have a degree in performing arts with a focus on direction and production. And I really thought that's what I was going to do for a living. And shortly after my 21st birthday, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I'd been exhibiting symptoms since I was about 16 years old. And to be honest, we got to the MS, and I thought, I'm okay with this. There were a lot of really scary things that I would not have been able to live through that had been discussed as they were trying to figure out what was causing my symptoms. And mm-hmm. I got to MS, and I said, I can live with this. I can live through this. I can live with this, and I can make it. I can continue in a very successful person. But I also knew that life in the theater with this was not going to be feasible for me anymore, just because I couldn't give the time that people needed for me to make that job a success. I received my own service dog, my first service dog, in April of 2001. You can check Laddie out on our website with some photos. You can check him out. He's just the best ever that there ever was. And he made such a huge difference in my life that the woman who was running the program where I got him from asked me if she could put my name forward for this position with Canines for Disabled Kids. And it's all worked in drawing on all that theater experience, that organization experience, that public speaking experience, and just putting it into a different passion.
So if you don't mind, can you share, for those who do not understand what multiple sclerosis or MS is, can you give us a little overview of what that means and how that really impacts your life?
It's, in short, it's an autoimmune deficiency disorder where your immune system is basically attacking aspects of your nervous system. When I talk with kids, I often say to them that it's like being in the Verizon commercial, only we don't have a Verizon phone. So my brain is going, can you hear me now? And some parts of my body go, yep, and the other parts of my body just don't respond because they can't get the message. For me, it has significantly impacted my ability to walk. I walk because of a number of tools, one of them being my service dog, another being a brace and some other things. I'm slowly losing that ability to control, particularly my left leg from the hip down.
Mm-hmm.
I am in a progressive situation. I will progress hopefully very slowly, but I will progress the rest of my life unless there's some kind of science that comes out that's able to stop that as my life continues. It's difficult. It affects so many people in so many different ways that I meet people who are amazed that I'm still walking, and I meet people who are doing so much better than I am, and it doesn't seem to be relevant to how long you've had the disease or how long it's been affecting your life. I know folks that it's affecting their ability, their memory much more severely than others. I know folks that it's affected their hands more severely. Fortunately, my hands are doing okay, you know, there's some limitations there. There's some adjustments for me with digestive things and things. But I can still see, I can still drive, I can still articulate things well. And those are things that I have that other people with MS don't have. So it's a very individual situation. And that makes it very hard for people to understand in your community. Well, you don't look like somebody else I know who has it. It makes it hard for science, and it makes it hard for doctors to figure all this out. So in some ways, I think that's one of the things that connected me with service dogs, because that, again, is very individual, very custom, very one-on-one. And having a disability that affects people that way opened me to being more open when somebody says to me, can this help me? Can you help me?
Very cool. I love these stories where, you know, you're given a lesson and some people run with it and they just grab it by the horns and say, yeehaw, I'm going to make the most out of this and really help other people. So talk to us a little bit about the Canines for Disabled Kids. How did that formulate? I know you're right. You're near here, aren't you? You're Massachusetts, or are you
in
New
Hampshire? We're in Massachusetts. No, we are in Massachusetts. Yep, we're in Central Mass. We're located in Worcester, right in the heart of the state. Pretty easy for people to find us and get to us. We're recently moved into Worcester, so we're very excited about that, our new office space. So, yay, that's always fun and exciting. But the program started in 98, and to be honest, the program started thinking that they were going to train dogs for children, because when they started, there were not a lot of training programs that were willing to produce service dogs for children under the age, really of about 15 or 16 years old. When I came on board, we kind of redeveloped the program. We said, this is not necessary. There are now lots of programs doing this. The problem is getting people connected to them and getting people to understand what this is about. And I said, I want to take what I have in my life and what my skills are and make this just the best it possibly can be. So I spend this time really sharing my personal experiences, helping families to connect with what their needs are and the possible resources that are out there, which they may or may not have ever considered. We do lots of education. We do lots of one-on-one, and we also do scholarships, because these dogs can be very expensive, about $25,000 a piece. And so we award scholarships to children to help fund that training as well. But the program really started thinking that they were going to be a lot smaller than they were, thinking they were going to have a much more closed niche, that people would find them, they would train the dog for their child, and then that would be it. It's really blossomed. It's just expanded 10 times over and 10 times again over that, as far as people reaching out to us, having us come into their schools, having us come in and share very real-life experiences, and just the difference something like this can make in somebody's life. I tell people, these dogs changed my life. These dogs I credit with being able to keep me walking as well as I still do. They keep me from falling down almost all the time. They're not perfect. I don't want to claim perfection here, but my first dog, I went from falling every day to falling twice in 6 months because of the skills he had. And when I take that and I take that for me as an adult, what it did for me, what it did for my parents who had an adult child that they were concerned about, what if she falls in the street and can't get up? She's going to get run over. What if she falls in the grocery store and nobody will help her? What's going to happen? And then I talk to parents who are having similar fears or concerns for their 10-year-old, for their 15-year-old, for their new high school student who is suffering from seizure disorders, or their child who has cerebral palsy, who's wheelchair-based, who just wants to do things for themselves. And this dog may be the reason that they can do that. I know children that the first time they went to the bathroom in their lives without a grown-up was because of how their service dog was trained to help them self-transfer from their wheelchairs to the toilet and back. And they're doing that, some of them, for the first time at 15 years old, 14 years old. It's life-changing. And to be able to make those connections and get that information out there is just a huge passion for me.
One of the things that I find with service dogs and the concept, I know that some people actually have issues with it. They don't really fully understand the value of them, and I really want you to delve into that for us. But one of the things as a life coach, as the roles that I play in life, I think the dogs, aside from training, they're really, really emotionally and mentally a huge part of the healing and the coping mechanism of whatever your issue is.
They absolutely are. And one of the things I have to work with families and communities to understand is that that aspect of what these dogs do is what we call a bonus. There's no legal protection over that. And all of that piece of this is outside of what makes a service dog a legal tool according to the federal rules and the federal laws that govern that. So we want to make sure that people understand that that is definitely part of what this is. It's, you can't have a living tool and not have that emotional bonus that comes with it, that emotional stimulus to help you through certain aspects of your disability. I mean, I can't ever say I'm not getting up and going for a walk today. Because every day I need to get up and take him for a walk for his own purposes. Every day he helps me to motivate. If I'm having a rough morning, he's like, let's get up. We need to get going. My first service dog sometimes would drag the harness that he wears to me. It's a special harness that I lean on when we walk. And he would drag it to me and say, hey, you're running late. I want to get out. I want to go do things.
Let's go. Come on.
Exactly. And you can't put a value on that, as a tangible value on that. It's just beyond words what that does. The skill that allows him to do that in public, the legalness that makes him a tool that has public access, that's taking me so that he's walking me through airports and museums and grocery stores and movie theaters and any place else, doctor's offices, any place else I need to go, is the ability, in his case, was the ability to balance me while I'm walking. He literally would push against me as I wobble. When I walk, I look like a weeble because I kind of walk side to side as I move my leg from my hip instead of from my knee. Walking like that is very difficult because you trip on everything. You trip on lint. It just gets in the way, and it doesn't have to be very big. But his skill was trained to be able to counter those things so that I wasn't falling. Also to be able to pick things up for me so that I did not have to risk bending over when I dropped my keys and risk a fall there.
Mm-hmm.
Those skills were essential in themselves, but then you add to that this living constantly with you creature who is constantly saying to you, hey, we can do this. And it's important that it's we can do this. I can do this with him. I don't have to rely on another person's time schedule, on another person's value about what I want to do. If I want to change the TV, he'll get me the remote and we'll change the TV station. It doesn't matter that somebody says, oh, this is fine. It'll be over in 20 minutes. We don't need to change it right away. Or if I want to change, you know, if I'm doing some artwork or something and I want to change the color that I'm using and I can't reach the marker or a child's crayons have fallen on the floor, we can do this now. I want the new crayon. I want to open the door. My dog and I can do this now in my time schedule, in my independence. And there is no price tag. There is no price tag you can put on that. To borrow from the MasterCard commercials, that's priceless.
Well, and I think sometimes, and honestly, just from my perspective as a life coach and working with people on an international level with different types of issues, sometimes we get into a slump. Our adversity can be overwhelming, and the unconditional nature of a dog is very motivating and healing and softening of a soul, I think.
I absolutely
and that's definitely
agree.
priceless.
Absolutely. I fell recently. I had two falls this summer, one at the beginning of the summer, one at the end of the summer. It's a nice way to round off the season. And both times my dog looked at me like, what are you doing? What did you possibly think you were doing? And there's no...
Your dog's nagging, you know.
Yes, yeah, so he's like, really? Get up. He's like, do you see me? That's here great. I am. Let's get up. Let's get going. But there's never a moment that he looks at me and says, you know, well, that was stupid. Or
right.
that he looks at me and says, well, obviously you're not worth something because you couldn't walk in a straight line in the airport. That value is so huge. And when we give that, especially to children, it's effective with all folks who are using these service dogs to overcome their disabilities. It's children and adults, but I see it so significantly in children that we give them this tool, that the tool not only gives them the physical ability to open the door or turn the lights on and off, which they haven't been able to do for themselves, but the support to say, I'm of value, and this is a creature that exists and values me 100% and values what I am, and we are going to show the world what my value is. And you're right, there's not a lot of other ways that you can get over those slumps or get through that fog to say, I'm worth it.
This is a great place for you, my friend, to give us where we find that more information about you. How do we reach you? I have more questions, and the show's almost out of time, so how do we find
you? Okay, well, you can reach Canines for Disabled Kids. Our website is www.caninesforkids.org, and that's spelled out CanineforKids.org. We are on Facebook at Canines for Kids, so you can check us out there. And you can always give us a call if you want to touch base with me in person. You can do that at 978-422-5299 or 1-888-KID-DOGS. So, and that toll-free number is good nationwide.
All right. Very cool. So you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty.
And I'm Amy.
And today's guest is Christine from Canines for Disabled Kids. And feel free to give us a call in. We love to hear your questions. The number here is 347-205-9443. So, Kristen, give us a high-level overview, or if you feel really passionate about doing a deep dive, that's totally cool, but I might have to pull you back a little bit for those of us who are just learning.
Okay.
What does the training of a dog really consist of? I mean, you're talking about my child, hypothetically, you know, my little baby who is in a wheelchair being transferred from the toilet to the wheelchair so they can have potty time. I mean, for me, I'm just visualizing going, oh, my God, I'm having a panic attack. So really clarify what that is like for those of us who are extremely imaginative.
Well, the first thing to remember is that everything with a service dog is about the individual that they're working with. So the service dog skill has to be pertinent to the individual's needs. And that means that sometimes there's a skill, and this happens a lot with parents, that I'll say, your five-year-old's not ready for this skill, but when they're 10 or 12, they're going to be ready for this skill. So we want to make sure that we're looking at the skill that the dog can offer and the child and where that child is in their lives. A service dog ideally starts training at about 8 weeks of age. In some ways it's like going through school for us. They're going to go to a kindergarten type mindset where they're learning things like how to share, because sharing is so important. They cannot be protective or aggressive. They cannot be flipping out because a train went by. They cannot be, saying, gee, I don't want this person to get on the elevator with us. They have to learn all of those things. So people should feel very comfortable that these animals, while they're in people's face, they're comfortable. They're like, hey, another person. There we go. I'm doing my job and I'm hanging out here. They start moving through the process of really acclimating themselves first to what it means to live in a people world and to not exhibit some behaviors that our pets might exhibit as far as protecting or barking at the doors and things like that. But then based on what they are good at, they should be matched to the skills of an individual. So we'll see a lot of smaller breed dogs learning to do things like recognize sounds, and then when they recognize a specific sound, see someone knocking on the door, they're going to touch their hearing-impaired partner and lead the partner to the door by pointing towards the door, coming back and touching the partner, pointing towards the door, coming back and touching the partner until the person responds to that. You will see larger breed dogs, lots of Goldens, lots of Labs out there that are doing this, about 80% in the industry, where they're doing things like being trained to stand and brace out so that an individual might be able to roll forward onto their shoulders, do some shifting, and then roll back into a new position for a self-transfer. The dog is going to know all of these things before they get placed with your child. They're going to be matched with all of these things regardless of the training program. The dog should know what it's doing before it gets matched with your child, so that you're not worried that your child is going to start to lean over on the dog to transfer it in the bathroom and the dog is going to go, oops, I didn't really want to do this. This was not the job I wanted. That's all going to be figured out. It should all be figured out before the child gets matched with the dog. And then the child and the dog and the parent will have training with the training program that says, this is how you use this tool. This is how this has been trained to work. So that you're learning very hands-on about how this works. You have time to work in a safe environment to say, wait, was I positioned right? I'm starting to slip. I'm nervous about this. How do I adjust for that? You've got that practice time to work with your trainer, to work with the dog. And the dogs are really amazingly patient, going, hey, try again. It's okay. I got plenty of time for you to learn how to do this. And that can be really hard for parents. I think the hardest thing I find for parents is that they want to give their children the independence, and then as their children grab the independence with this new tool, they go, wait, come back. That can be the hardest thing, because once a child really learns how to use their dog, pick this up for me, let me lean on you, let me stabilize on you, they're ready to go, and they're going to go 110 miles an hour down the road because they are looking for what their futures are going to bring, and their dogs are going to be right there to bring them, to help bring them through it.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, just as from a parent's perspective, once, you know, we work so hard when they're toddlers trying to get them to walk and take their first step, and it's so cute, and then once they start walking and running, we're going, what did we just do?
Exactly. Wait,
stop. Wait.
Exactly. I had a mother once tell me that her first, she was like, yay, look, he's walking. And she said, you know, it was hard not to reach out and trip the second one as he was starting to learn. Because I thought, no, not yet.
I love honest mothers. That's awesome. I really wanted to trip him and say no. That's great.
Keep him younger for a while. But that really happens with these what the service dogs can do too. You're seeing that with these parents going, yay, ooh. The dog is not capable of doing what your child needs. They should not be placed with your child. And the trainers know that.
Now, I read a long, long time ago that the puppies are actually raised in foster homes and the trainers take them daily or whatever to do the training, and the foster parents are also responsible for continuing aspects of that training. Is that still true? It's going to really depend on
the training program. It's very common for training programs to use foster families, to use mm-hmm. inmates, and to use professional trainers. What we're often seeing is a combination of the three, so that everybody's working under the supervision of the professional trainer, that the foster families are taking those dogs, in some cases short-term, like just for the weekend. Others are longer-term, depending on the program. And they're focusing on, especially the younger age, they're focusing on public behavior. This is how we behave in the library. This is how we behave at the grocery store. We don't go to the bathroom in the Bishop's Rose Garden. You know, these types of things
right,
that are very essential.
Exactly.
And so that those people are focusing on that social aspect. Then there will either be classes with the trainer, or there will be inmates that are doing the classes with the trainer, where they're focusing on the harder skill, the hard tasks, we would say. They're teaching the dogs to fetch. They're teaching the dogs to turn light switches on and off, to open doors, to help tug jackets on and off, to help hold shoes so that you can put your foot into the shoe, to retrieve targeted objects like the telephone, like someone's, and one family I know, they retrieve an a kit which has an asthma inhaler in it. And the overall, the professional trainer is working with all of these pieces. And sometimes they take the dog for a few days, do some evals. Sometimes they're putting them in mixed groups. And they will be the point person that will decide when the dog is finished training, whether the dog has the skills for person A, B, or C, or whether the dog stays in the program at all. 50% of the dogs will fail in the industry at any given time. So it's not a high success.
Two questions, because I had my mental Cheshire Cat breaks go on, and you were so passionate and in a role, I didn't want to interrupt you too quickly. If I heard correctly, you said inmates also train the dogs.
Yes.
So give us an overview, because for me, I think that's awesome. That is like double whammy.
It's getting more bang for your buck, absolutely. There are a number of prisons around the United States that work with different training programs that puppies are entering the prison. They are living with an inmate. They get assigned an inmate for the entire time that they will be there. That inmate has the dog 24 hours a day for the days that he has it, usually about 5 days, 4 or 5 days a week. The inmate is actually gaining a lot from the dogs. Some of the inmates that I've had an opportunity to meet have told me that for the first time in their lives, they learned how to give and receive unconditional love, and that it's changed their perspective on what got them to where they are and where they want to go when they get out. In another aspect, it's producing a larger quantity of dogs that can be used for service, because these men and women have the ability to sit and focus purely on what these dogs need to learn. So some of these dogs are learning their task work much faster than they were when it was just a foster family and a trainer. By adding this third piece, some of these dogs are learning their skills and becoming more proficient in their skills, therefore producing more dogs for the industry and for those folks like myself who need them. So it's an amazing partnership. Not all programs use this. Not all programs are set up. Not all prisons facilities are willing to or able to take this kind of program into their facility. But those that have and are doing it are just finding it an amazing partnership all the way around.
Absolutely. I could only imagine the sense of, as an inmate, depending on their level of issue for being there,
they're
you're in trouble, and now all of a sudden you're given this little tiny cutesy batootsy life to be responsible for. That in itself is a huge emotional, mental, and spiritual conundrum for individuals who end up in situations like that.
One young man said to me that after he'd been given a new puppy at 8 weeks old, they're not housebroken or anything at that point, so he had been working with this puppy, and when the puppy was finally housebroken, he wrote a letter to his wife and said, "I'm so sorry I wasn't around when our little ones were going through this," because he didn't understand what it was like to get up in the middle of the night with a sick child, or to be frustrated that a child who was learning how to use the bathroom had had an accident, but not to take it out on the child, to just say, "Hey, it's an accident, we'll get over it." And all of a sudden, he had to learn all of that in a very short period of time with this puppy, who he said every time he thought he was going to be mad at the puppy, it looked up and said, "Oops," with these big cute brown eyes. And he said, "My gosh, I had to write her this letter and tell her how sorry I was that I didn't understand, and that now this was changing my life so that I could be a better person." And at the same time, he was producing something that was going to help another individual be able to be the best that they could be as well. So the puppy was touching lives left and right and changing them on levels that were never anticipated.
That's so incredible. Just incredible. I love that. That's a big bang for your buck, I think, for sure.
Absolutely.
Second question, in regards to what you just shared with us, is what happens to the cutie patooties that don't graduate? Where do they go?
Most training programs have a system set up where the dogs that don't pass, usually they give them some really cute names like Furloughed Pups or Fabulous Flunkies or different things like that. And those dogs are adopted out at a fee to private families, or in some cases even police departments will come in. I know some dogs that were amazingly well at doing things that turned into drug sniffing or search and rescue programs, but that they could not make the full people aspect of being a service dog. So they made the transfer to being drug sniffing dogs for local police departments or working with an individual on a search and rescue squad for different communities or just to be amazingly wonderful pets for people in their own homes.
Yay, I want one. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Definitely. Definitely.
So one of the questions that have come in via chat is it a particular kind of breed that are raised specifically for this task, or how does one determine that these pups are ready to even be considered for such a huge life?
Some training programs will breed their own dogs, and they're testing those puppies. First, they're selecting parents that are going to give them the best options, and then they're testing those puppies literally within days of them, of their birth. They're seeing how they handle touch responses from people. They're looking to see what they're doing as they get older. Most programs work with a combination of dogs that come from rescue programs, dogs that come from personal breeders, and then there's a scattering of dogs that come from people who just said, I got this dog and he's a great dog, but I made a mistake. I'm not ready for a dog. Would you like to test him to see if he'll come into your program? And at different points they're being tested for different things, but in general, the earlier that the younger they are, you're looking at things like, will they let me take a toy from them that they're playing with, or will they try to protect it? If they're going to try to protect it or hoard it or growl at you, these are not things that you're not going to get through the entrance exam. You're looking really for those dogs that are like, hey, you want it? You can have it. If you throw it back,
not really
the
alpha type.
Yeah, we're not looking at the alphas, but we're not looking at the bottom of the groupings either. You're not looking for those dogs that are sitting in the corner when you walk into the room and like, please don't look at me, please don't look at me, because you don't want a dog. Those are sweethearts, but you don't want a dog like that in public, because he's going to be afraid when a car drives by, or he's going to be afraid when something falls off a shelf in a grocery store, and you don't want that either. You really are looking for those middle group of puppies that are like, hey, so it's the world, and I'm with you. They're constantly being tested as they go through, making sure that they're learning the skills properly, both the physical skills that they need as well as the social aspects, so that they meet strangers. You'll see puppy trainers doing all sorts of strange things to try to make sure that their dogs are not going to be startled at some unexpected event. I've seen them with bizarre hats. I see them hanging out at train stations. I see them standing on their head, going to parks, looking for anything that might be unusual or odd-looking or strange-sounding or strange-smelling to get these dogs to go, hey, it's just something new, just something else in our lives, not a big deal. And dogs that can make it through that continually go, yeah, it's just something else in life, are the dogs that will come through at the top of the program and become service dogs.
Very cool. So what types of fundraising efforts do you have going on this year that you'd like to talk about? We've got about 12 minutes left to the show, so feel free to utilize that time to really discuss where you're going to be, what you're doing, and how we can be involved.
Great. Well, one thing to do is always check out our website or our Facebook to see if something new has been added, because we always are looking to add new and exciting opportunities for folks to be involved with us. We have an annual event which happens in June in Worcester, which is a beer and dessert matching event. It's been several years now, and folks should watch for, we call it, it takes place in Worcester at a facility called Sweets in Worcester, and you can watch for upcoming information on that. You purchase a ticket and you get a number of samples of different beers that have been matched with different desserts, and we learn why those are good matches and gives people an opportunity to try different combinations of things. And almost everybody who's bought a ticket said to me, "Really?" And then they came out going, "I can't wait for next year." So the event is growing and growing. We're very excited about this. So that's our one of our staple events. We also have a number of different programs, which you can check out on our website as well, that different companies have said that if you purchase items from their company, they will make a contribution back to CDK for that purchase. So we have jewelry that's for sale. We have an energy provider that is, if you switch to them for your energy source, that then they make a donation to us every month that you're with them. So that can be a significant for us. Merchants that use credit card vending machine, credit card processing machines, can sign up, and there's a program that we get a donation based on how much you swipe through your credit card machine in your facility. So that's for businesses that they can choose. We also have a new one that we're not quite ready to completely unveil, but watch as we will be having a large online fundraiser that will have a number of different thank you rewards that people can select. And the rumor is that we'll have a number of things coming out of the Hollywood area, maybe some signed photos of some famous folks, maybe some items that have come from different sets, different TV or movie studios, different props and things that people can receive for set donation amounts. So watch for that. We're also going to be starting a Twitter campaign that will be part of that. So look for those opportunities with us. And another great thing is that as a small program, we love to work with folks who say, "I really want to do this for you, and this is what I can do." So we've had children contact us and say, "We're going to collect cans," and they've raised thousands of dollars by cleaning up their community, collecting depositable bottles and cans, and then donating that to us. Or we've had children who have said, "I love to play street hockey," and I went and watched children in New Jersey play street hockey for 10 hours and raised $4,000 for us. It was just amazing to see these kids. So we love to work with people who say, "You know what, I could do this, and I can make this happen." And then that's why I say watch for new things all the time, because you just never know. And you can always just make a straight donation going to our website, or you can do that by mail or by credit card or check. And if you see us in person, we will take cash, but you can do that online. And then one of the greatest ways for us is if you are in a state, a federal, or another business that allows for payroll deductions. We have about half of our budget comes from individuals who have chosen us as a payroll deduction donation, and that just happens every time you get paycheck. You say $1 or $2 comes out, and on a quarterly basis that gets sent to us or to other programs around the country, depending on who you've selected. But that's a huge amount for us. About half of our budget comes from that. So
for those of us who are business owners and actually provide services and we would want to donate, you know, say hypothetically, this, you know, I would be willing to do 3 hours free coaching Skype time. How do organizations like mine get a hold of your organization so that we can donate a gift certificate or
You can whatever. You can come through our website, or through our website there's actually a button that says Talk to Kristen, so you can click on that and send an email to me. You can call us at the 978-422-5299 and speak with myself or with my special events coordinator, Mallory Anderson, and let us know what you have to offer, and we'll work with you to make that happen. So whether it's an ongoing thing that you'd like to donate, that we want to say, if you buy X salad dressing, you know, 5% of that salad dressing sale goes to our organization, or if it's something where you're saying, well, I'd like to give so many hours of my service, we'll work with you to decide whether it's better as a standalone, which we would put as an individual thing on the website, or whether it's something you want to add to this large online fundraiser that we're going to be doing. And we could say, okay, then if somebody donated X amount, they could check your offer on, as to say, to do the coaching. You can say, well, we'll check that, and then we would connect you with them once their donation had come through. So there's a lot
All
of
right,
ways that we can make those work.
Living and Thriving Plan, guess what? I'm going to do it. I'm doing 3 hours free Skype coaching. So go on to Canines for Disabled Kids. Hook up. I want to see a really, really good raffle on that one. Come on, guys.
Absolutely.
You can do it.
Absolutely.
I can offer a Reiki session or aromatherapy massage as well.
That's Ooh,
right.
That sounds wonderful.
And it is very worth it, too. Very worth it. I've been a
Definitely.
Guinea pig of hers for a long time.
That sounds
Actually,
wonderful.
Overdue.
I might have to bid on this. I might have to bid for that one myself.
You won't be
so you hear it live
I
here
promise.
On Living and Thriving, guys. Come on, some really good opportunities to help support this great cause. So
Absolutely.
With about 6 minutes, and this is completely your time, what is the one major, 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 major inspirational moment, concept, thing, message, healing that you want to have over 100,000 international listeners listen, hear, and take away from today's show?
Oh, gosh, that's
no pressure.
No pressure at all, none at all. I really think the most important thing to me with this is that when you support someone who has a service dog, you support not only that individual, but you change the community, you change the life that they're going to be living, because you allow that person to grow to the best they can be and contribute back into society, contribute forward into society. Without supporting this tool, whether you're supporting it financially, whether you're supporting it by making sure that your businesses are accessible and waiting for these people to come in, whether you are just helping to make people aware of what these dogs can do and how they can work and where they can work, you're changing lives, and by changing lives, you help to make the world a better place. And I don't know anything better than that. I don't know anything that we could aspire to as human beings that is better than improving the world that we live in. And these animals are doing it by just being themselves. Anything that we can do to make them have the access to continue to do what they do on a very natural basis will change the world and make it a much better place. And I don't know how else to do that except by doing the public speaking I do, doing the scholarships, working with these families. And if anybody can assist in making that happen, then the world will be even better, because there will be more than me doing it. So if people want to connect with me, I travel the country. So if you want me to come, I travel outside of the country. I've done programs into Canada recently and some other locations. If you want me to come to where you are, call me. We'll set a time. We'll set a meeting. I'd love to come and talk to business associations, schools, groups. you can help pass the word on. You can help make this obtainable. You can help make these connections happen by inviting me in, by connecting me, passing the word on. And I don't know anything that's better than that to make the world a better place for everybody. So I can't stress that enough. Certainly, again, reach out to me. You can find us at www.caninesforkids.org. You can reach us at 1-888-KID-DOGS or 978-422-5299. My personal extension is 101, so you can come straight through to me. Or if you're not sure, you know, just wait. My admin is great. She'll get help to get you directed between Mallory and myself, depending on what your focus is. These dogs make a difference. They help people to be independent, and isn't that what we all want?
Hmm. Well, and go ahead, Amy. I'm sorry.
This is very cool what she's doing here, because you never know at any time when someone is going to be in need of that type of service, and to know that it's out there and how the actual process is, you know, the better understanding. I think this is a really, I want you to come up here.
Absolutely.
I'm associated with a lot of shelters in the area. I actually just adopted a dog from a shelter, and I just like the whole process that you're talking about with the inmates and with the, you know, the shelters and the different, just pulling from all of those aspects to create something so wonderful is just fantastic. I'm very impressed, and kudos to you. I definitely will be in touch to find out more about this. So I'm really
glad
that we found you.
My curiosity, Amy, with what you do on the sly, do you think that Higher Learning would be open to having a presentation there?
I don't see why not. A higher
energy, I
think
she would be.
She would be. And to be honest, we could probably find, I can look into different areas where, you know, it would be better for even, you know, people, disabled people that don't know about the service dogs to be able to come and, I mean, I'm just getting brainstormed here, to see what, you know, what is the capability and how it can be integrated in their lives. I do event planning on the side, so that's something that I could work with up here, but I really
wonderful.
Think it would be a great idea, yeah.
Yeah, and we could do a full support for that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That would be great. That would be really great.
So I have about 2 minutes left, so I want to send you many, many virtual hugs, Kristen. I am so grateful for you and your work. I'm so grateful for your strength, your pride, your love. You're really, really an amazing woman. So thank you so much for doing what you do.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for having us this opportunity to have so many people hear our message and hopefully connect with us is just an opportunity. We cannot thank you enough. Your generosity in having us on and allowing for this it's probably making a big difference already. I'm hoping people are hearing and reaching out and making new connections with us.
And me and Nancy have big mouths too.
We do have big mouths, don't we? We're chatterers. We're like little
yes,
birds in the park. So again, reach out to Kristen at Canines for Disabled Kids, located in Worcester, Massachusetts. I will be donating 3 hours Skype consulting, and Amy is going to come up with a gift certificate as well. And Krista, if you don't mind emailing me, because you've been going through my assistant, or just email Karen with the address, that would be great. And 90 seconds left to the show. How grateful we are to have such amazing guests on Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty.
And I'm Amy.
And I'm so thrilled about today's show, and I'm trying to pull up next week's show before we run out of time, and I, oh, gosh, breathe. So next week we have Arthur Alice Greist, and she is a soulful spiritual adventurer and author of The High Heel Guide to Enlightenment. And y'all know how I love my heels, even though I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I like to be 6'3". That's just the way it is. But she's a joyful mama, and she does a pregnancy journal online, too. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with her and getting inspired by her. And that's next week here on Living and Thriving. As always, please know I love you. You're beautiful. I adore you. And I'm so grateful we get to walk this path together. My favorite day of the week. So keep smiling. It's contagious. Make someone else smile today. And just know that you're loved, and I see your beauty. Till next week.